You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Wednesday edition. We won't have a show either Thursday or Friday. I decided to take a day off. I was really thinking about taking the entire next week off, but I've decided to pass on that one. Starting Monday, we'll be back on our regular schedule of Monday through Friday, roughly at 5 to 6:30 to 7 o'clock. Now today, what is the story in the news? And it will have an impact, although it's going to be at least 60 days before it goes into effect. And yes, it's going to be challenged in the courts. It's in the immigration area. If this regulation goes into effect, is enforced, and even with the court challenges, is upheld, and I think it might be, then this would put an end to catch and release. Now, a little background. There's a decision, an agreement, really, between the Clinton Justice Department and the defendants in the suit. And this was at a time when you had so-called children, teenagers, minors. That's probably a better way to say, people under 18. They came largely unaccompanied by parents. And the problem you got into is why the United States government has detention centers. They're for adults. And you were getting so-called children, minors, being detained in the same facilities. Well, that obviously causes problems. And there was a lawsuit. And finally, the Clinton administration agreed to let the release of minors after 20 days. Now, I have a couple of videos if you want to get the background of it. I have three videos. And for new listeners, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is go to my companion blog, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And underneath my picture, you'll have links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. But underneath that, you'll have my show prep, together with cartoons, charts, graphs, depending on the story. What happened when Trump became president? Initially, they were separating children and adults, as did the Obama administration, by the way. It wasn't unique to Trump, although they try to make it seem that it's unique. So they did not separate the children or dependents of these parents, although in many cases it was questionable whether or not the people representing to be their parents actually were. If they did a DNA, many of them weren't. So for up until now, after 20 days, you could only keep the children 20 days. Then you had to either release them to their parents or put them in a facility mainly designed for children. And that's the problem. It's 20 days in release because what Trump administration decided to do, well, we'll release both the parents and the children, knowing full well that 80 to 90% will never come back. They'll get an assigned court hearing date and never come back. And that's a big hole, a big loophole. Now, what does this change in policy rule? And I think if it succeeds, and it's going to take time for the states to challenge this. Trump wants this. I want this. I think it's ridiculous, this 20-day rule. But I understand why you need it. You should be able to keep the children and the parents together. But that requires a facility that can do that. That's not a detention center. So let's listen to the acting head of the Department of Homeland Security.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us today to discuss important action the administration is taking to address the ongoing security and humanitarian crisis at our southwest border, publishing a final rule to implement the Flores Settlement Agreement. This year, we have seen an unprecedented flow of family units, primarily from Central America, coming to our southwest border. During the first 10 months of this fiscal year, U.S. Customs and Border Protection apprehended or encountered almost 475,000 families, 90% of whom crossed our border unlawfully between ports of entry, three times more than any previous full-year record. In the month of May alone, we saw 88,630 members of family units arrive at our border, four times the record month in the last major surge. As I have testified multiple times and as experts throughout this administration, as well as leaders from previous administrations have explained, the driving factor for this crisis is weakness in our legal framework for immigration. Human smugglers advertise, and intending migrants know well, that even if they cross the border illegally, arriving at our border with a child has meant that they will be released into the United States to wait for court proceedings that could take 5 years or more. This key gap in our immigration framework comes from a 2015 reinterpretation of the Flores Settlement Agreement, an agreement that is now more than two decades old, by a federal district court judge. This reinterpretation, which applied for the first time the requirements of the Flores Settlement to accompanied minors, has generally forced the government to release families into the country after just 20 days, and incentivizing illegal entry, adding to the growing backlog in immigration proceedings, and often delaying immigration proceedings for many years. This single ruling has substantially caused and continued to fuel the current family unit crisis and the unprecedented flow of Central American families and minors illegally crossing our border until today. After nearly 2 years of work by the Department of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services professionals, consideration of over 100,000 comments from stakeholders and members of the public, and a comprehensive review, the Trump administration has established a new rule to respond to the realities of current immigration flows, a rule based in the principle that families should remain together during immigration proceedings. While the Flores Settlement Agreement is operationally outdated and does not respond to the current immigration crisis, it has many important aspects and principles, like the need for special protections for children and high standards for government facilities, that were adopted as defining features in this new rule. This is an extensive and detailed rule, but this morning I want to highlight four key elements. First and foremost, the new rule permanently establishes standards of care in custody for children and families. These standards are high. In doing so, the rule fulfills one of the central, original purposes of the 1997 Flores Court Settlement Agreement to ensure appropriate care for all children. A national standard of care ensures that care in custody of children and families is not a policy decision and should not be subject to the ebbs and flows of state and local politics. Instead, all children in the government's care will be universally treated with dignity, respect, and special concern in concert with American values and faithful to the intent of the original settlement. The facilities that we will be using to temporarily house families under this rule are appropriately fundamentally different than the facilities where migrants are processed following apprehension or encounter at the border. They are campus-like settings with appropriate medical, educational, recreational, dining, and private housing facilities. For example, the First Family Residential Center in Berks, Pennsylvania has suites where each family is housed separately. Furniture, bedding, towels, clothing, and toiletries are provided. There's a large community living room that has big screen television, cushioned couches and lounge chairs, a gaming area, and a separate library that contains books, other television sets, video games, and board games. The facility also has an entire wing dedicated to classroom learning where minors at the facility go to school 5 days a week. Another wing is a medical facility where minors and their parents receive any necessary medical care, including all immunizations required for later admission to U.S. public schools. There are also phone banks to call relatives, consulates, attorneys, or other representatives. In all family residential centers, three hot meals a day are provided, and snacks are available throughout the day. All of our three family residential centers offer a variety of indoor and outdoor daily recreation activities. For children and adults, indoor activities offered include a variety of sports, group exercise classes, arts and crafts classes, movie nights, and even seasonal holiday-themed activities. Outdoor recreational facilities include soccer fields, volleyball courts, and play structures. The FRCs have video conferencing set up for court hearings and private meeting rooms so that families can meet with their attorneys or representatives. Child care is provided to the parents while they meet with their attorneys or representatives or attend these hearings. Interpreting services are available 24 hours a day via telephone. Attorneys and representatives approved to appear at immigration court hearings are provided access to the residents at various times each week, enabling families to obtain counsel and not have to appear at immigration hearings as pro se respondents. The new rule will ensure that children and families in the care of the government are temporarily housed in facilities that are appropriate for their well-being. Second, the new rule closes the legal loophole that arose from the reinterpretation of Flores, which Congress has refused to do, allowing the federal government to house alien families together in appropriate facilities during fair and expeditious proceedings, as was done by the previous administration in 2014 and 2015. Prior to the 2015 court ruling that restricted our use of the FRCs, immigration proceedings averaged less than 50 days, granting those with meritorious claims prompt relief and permission to stay in the U.S. with appropriate documentation, while swiftly repatriating those with meritless claims who have comprised a substantial majority of the families arriving and being processed. Our goal remains, as in the previous administration, to provide an expeditious immigration result while holding families together, which particularly benefits legitimate asylum seekers with meritorious claims. The current system, however, serves those with meritless claims and leaves all migrants in a state of limbo for years. In recent months, the majority of final orders of removal for families who recently arrived at our border have been issued in absentia, over 85%. This rule changes that dynamic. The result of holding families together under the previous administration was a dramatic reduction in the flow of unlawful crossings by families. The 2015 court ruling upended that process, and the direct and predictable result has been two family surge crises at the border, first in 2016 and now at unprecedented levels this year. When fully implemented, the new rule will restore the humane and effective procedures employed in 2014 and 2015. Third, by closing this key loophole in Flores, the new rule will restore integrity to our immigration system and eliminate the major pull factor fueling the crisis. As I stated earlier, this year has brought record volumes of family units to our southwest border. In the first 10 months of the fiscal year, U.S. Customs and Border Protection has observed a 469% increase in the number of family units apprehended between ports of entry from our FY18 numbers. While this year's increase is especially dramatic, family apprehensions have increased at an annual average of 72% over the past fiscal years. In fiscal year 2013, before Flores was reinterpreted, the total number of family units apprehended entering the United States illegally on the southern border was 14,855. Again, by August of this fiscal year, we have already seen almost 475,000 family units apprehended. By eliminating the incentive to make the journey to the United States as a family, the new rule will reduce the unprecedented volume of family units that has strained the already limited resources of our department components and put children throughout the region at risk. The scale of this crisis has required us to ask a tremendous amount of our Border Patrol agents and CBP officers as they have stepped up. This new rule will provide them with well-deserved relief and allow them to rededicate their resources and time towards stopping criminals at the border, the job they signed up to do. And fourth, the new rule will protect children by reducing incentives for adults, including human smugglers, to exploit minors in the dangerous journey to our border, using them to beat the system and be released into the United States. So far this fiscal year, Border Patrol agents have identified approximately 6,000 migrants who have fraudulently presented as members of family units at the border. In response, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Homeland Security Investigations has conducted two DNA pilot testing programs that have definitively identified dozens of cases in which children had no familial relation to the adults claiming that. In the first operation, Operation Double Helix 1, 16 out of 84 family units were identified as fraudulent based on negative DNA results. In the second version of the operation, 79 of our 522 family units tested have been identified as fraudulent based on negative DNA results to date. These egregious examples of migrants posing as family units that ICE has uncovered demonstrates the necessity of this new rule. No child should be a pawn in a scheme to manipulate our immigration system, which is why the new rule eliminates the incentive to exploit children as a free ticket, or as one gentleman in Guatemala told me, a passport for migration to the United States. This action by the administration is just one part of our overall effort, but it's an essential one that will do a great deal to address the crisis we are facing. To emphasize again, at the heart of this new rule are two core principles: that families should remain together during immigration proceedings, and that conditions for care of children must be appropriate. The new rule establishes a high national standard for care of children and families in custody, allows the government to keep families together for fair and expeditious immigration proceedings, restores integrity to our immigration system, and eliminates the incentive for children to be used or exploited to enter the United States. The border security and migration challenges we face require a whole-of-government approach, and we look forward to working together, including with our international partners, to continue to address them.
Well, it was about time to address this issue. Just to summarize, initially, the Flores rule, and the government thought was of this opinion, it only applied to unaccompanied children or teenagers. It did not apply to those that came with their parents. Then in 2015, they broadened the interpretation to apply with if they came with parents. That's what he was referring to. Now, what's the problem? Well, at one time, the overwhelming majority of people coming were young males, single males, some of them teenagers. But we've had a concerted effort, both in the United States and abroad, to make this a crisis. And the reason, the motivation is simple. The Democratic Party wants all the illegal aliens that are in the United States to get citizenship. That's their objective. And that fundamentally, they betray their oath of office and they betray the American people. They're more concerned about illegal aliens and getting reelected by getting citizenship to all the illegal aliens so they can stay in power for decades. You need to understand that. And it's not, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. There are a lot of Republicans that won't say it, but that's what they want because they get large contributions from businesses, employers that benefit from cheap, compliant labor. That's what we're talking about. And that's why the American people are mad. The reason why Donald Trump is president today is because the American people said enough is enough. We're paying all these taxes. It's costing us over $100 billion. And the major concern is the poor illegal aliens. Not the American citizen. You see, ladies and gentlemen, this has been going on for 33 years since the last time we had so-called immigration reform. And they didn't build the border barrier. As a result, the problem has festered and gotten bigger. The American people want the invasion of this country by illegal aliens stopped. They want it rolled back. Did you listen to all the money, taxpayer money, that's going to, and I'm not against the rule, going to be spent, hopefully to expedite it? I agree with the idea the family that stays together should be deported together, and I would say at least 85 to 90% of the people ultimately will be deported. Yes, there are some legitimate refugees. I won't argue that. There isn't. There are. But the overwhelming majority of the people are not. They're coming here to get a better job, standard of living. They're not in fear of their lives or being persecuted by whether it's the government or gangs. Their economic is primarily economic reasons that they break into the country. And up to now, the government's hands were more or less tied. It released the kids with the parents with the kids would disappear somewhere in the United States. And eventually, when the court, they had their court appearance, they didn't show up. No one knew where they were. Oh yeah, there are a few that did, but most of them are also deported. Some were legitimate. That's the only good thing about this. It does correct a problem because with this flood and what we're talking about numbers, it's right back up to over a million. And those are the apprehensions. And I need to emphasize this. We have information on apprehensions. And now, because they're using a loophole. They're saying they're refugees when they're not. Our government knows they're not. They know they're not. But they got their story down. So now we keep them together and hopefully they can get it down to less than 50 days. In other words, expedite the processing, and hopefully that will stop it. The American people's patience on this invasion is being worn thin, and I think there's going to be a major backlash against whoever the Democratic candidate for president, because what they want is open borders. Most of them want to do away with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the reason is very simple. They want to give citizenship. When you hear open borders, the first thing you should think of, they want to give citizenship to all the illegal aliens that are here, and there's anywhere between 30 million and 60 million, and maybe more. Keep that in mind. And the calculation is that if eventually they can get citizenship, the Democratic Party will get at least 2/3 of them as registered Democrats. And then they will have in many states locks. In other words, they could keep power for decades, ultimately ideally to them, become a single party dominating in most states. And if they succeed in giving citizenship to all the illegals that are here, that's exactly what's happening. So I applaud the rule. It's overdue, but it's going to cost some money, folks. And the Democrats don't want to give them the money. They don't want to give the money for the wall at all. You see, we were supposed to secure the borders. We haven't. And this has been going on, like I say, for 33 years. This adds up. And now we're looking at anywhere between 30 and 60 million, and probably more. If they didn't do this, it would even get worse, because it looks like it'll be about 1 million apprehensions. But that doesn't include those that are not apprehended. Not all the people that are coming here are playing this game. They're trying not to be apprehended, so they sneak over the border. They don't present their papers for inspection. The next step is they get fraudulent documents, Social Security cards, identification, so they could work. And then they work every day, taking jobs from who? American citizens. And if you want to know why our wages and our salaries have been relatively flat, it's because of this. That's a lot of people added to the labor force. Eventually, the children grow up. And what is the U.S. taxpayer paying for? The education of these illegal aliens, the welfare benefits, the prisons and jails that they go to. And they do pay in the crimes they commit. So I congratulate the Trump administration for doing this. But the but is, are you going to get enough money to make this happen? This is expensive. I couldn't have time to play some of the videos, but one of the statistics I heard that when the U.S. government has to pay for it, it costs around $900 each a day. So there's you know, that's a nice place. $900, that gives you a lot of food, room, and all this. This is not cheap, folks. We need to stop this. If we had built that border barrier and enforced the law by having it patrolled, and I mean make the border tight. That's why you need a total of 1,500 miles of additional border barrier. Now, what else is in the news besides this new rule? We'll come back to this as it's implemented, but I have no doubts that a number of states are already in court trying to stop this, and it'll be appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. You watch it. Now, President Trump has made a statement that I knew was going to get him in trouble, and I'm going to play both of them. And it's comments about the loyalty or disloyalty of Jews that vote Democrat. Let's hear what President Trump said and then repeated in the Oval Office.
So I have been responsible for a lot of great things for Israel. One of them was moving the embassy to Jerusalem, making Jerusalem the capital of Israel. One of them was the Golan Heights. One of them, frankly, is Iran. Iran is a very far weakened nation right now, much different. Hopefully something works out. We'll see if it happens. It happens. Wait a minute. Wait. No president has ever done anywhere close to what I've done between Golan Heights, Jerusalem, Iran, and other things. Excuse me. Wait a minute. No president has done what I've done. We have a group. I call it AOC plus three. You could call the person, Representative Tlaib, you could say Representative Omar, you could go any way you wanted to go. They are anti-Semites. They are against Israel. She had a plan to greatly embarrass Israel by going there with the fact that she wanted to see her grandmother. I assume that's true. I hope that's true. But it was very bad. Very bad. The things that she and others of that group and other Democrats have said. And they have become the face of the Democratic Party. And I will tell you this. In my opinion, the Democrats have gone very far away from Israel. I cannot understand how they can do that. They don't want to fund Israel. They want to take away foreign aid to Israel. They want to do a lot of bad things for Israel. In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel, and only weak people would say anything other than that.
Now, I think he's absolutely right, but then he, in the Oval Office, repeated it, made it a little bit stronger.
I don't blame Israel for doing what they did. I have nothing to do with it, but I don't blame them for doing what they did. I think it would have been very bad to let them in, including the four. I'm talking about all four, but these two that wanted to get in, Omar and Tlaib. And I think it would be a very bad thing for Israel, but Israel has to do what they want to do. But I would not cut off aid to Israel. And I can't even believe that we're having this conversation. 5 years ago, the concept of even talking about this, even 3 years ago, of cutting off aid to Israel because of two people that hate Israel and hate Jewish people. I can't believe we're even having this conversation. Where has the Democratic Party gone? Where have they gone where they're defending these two people over the state of Israel? And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty.
Now, why did he say that? Jews, like blacks, high percentage vote Democrat, 90-95%. There are some, mainly conservative Jews, that don't. But it is, and remember, the Jewish population of the United States, I think it's 2%. I don't know the exact number. But because a high percentage not only vote, but make contributions, and now what is the Democratic Party and some of its members doing? They're betraying the people that have supported him for decades. He's pointing this out. The Democratic Party is very much changed. It's very much radical. Now, I got the signal. I got to wrap it up. I thought I had a little bit more time. Two other stories. One I'll try to do briefly. Clearly, a number of the big tech companies, primarily Google, who owns YouTube, as well as Amazon, Facebook, and Apple, are going to be scrutinized by the Department of Justice, in particular the Antitrust Division. And what's bringing this on is the attempt by some of these companies to censor conservative or classical liberal or libertarian views by deleting or in various ways. I call it censorship. But they dominate, for example, Google dominates search. It obviously dominates YouTube. They own Amazon in the retail online shopping, Apple with its iPhone, and Facebook with its social networking applications. Virtually all the leadership of those companies are liberal to progressive left. And now they're definitely trying to tilt towards making sure that the Democratic Party wins. So there are a number of things. You could break them up. That's one. And let me just make sure you understand. I'm not a big fan of antitrust law or regulating. I believe in competition. But you have a but here, and it's a big but. You can get in a situation where one, maybe two firms totally dominate a segment of the market. So what do? And they use that domination in, for example, search. You have Bing, you do have Google and others, but most people, they use Google and maybe Bing. I use both of them. Most people, though, it's a habit, they use Google. So what do you do about market power and the apparent abuse of power and politicizing it? I think some of them want regulation. Why? Who can afford regulation? Big companies, successful companies can afford regulation. Who can't? New entrants to the market. So this is going to be a long, drawn-out affair. But the politicians, especially those that are on the conservative to the right, are well aware of what's going on. And these companies are going to be scrutinized like they never had before. And it's going to be difficult, I'm not saying impossible, to rein them in. Now, one other thing. We have learned that Jeffrey Epstein, 2 days before he committed suicide, changed his will and, in essence, transferred the assets into a trust. And we have some visibility as to what those assets were. It was sort of just-in-time estate planning. I'm more and more of the opinion he wanted to commit suicide. He knew that if he lost this case, he was going to go to prison. And even if he went to prison, he would have been killed, probably violently, and even before could be killed. So he decided to end his life. But before he did, he engaged in some last-minute estate planning. I'm surprised he didn't do it before, quite frankly. And yes, he has some heirs. We don't know the terms of the trust, but all that will come out when the victims of his addiction, sexual addiction, he was molesting young women, not consenting. I say young women, it's really children, teenagers, taking advantage of them. And he got away with it for decades. When you have that much money together with influence with powerful people, money talks. You can hire the best lawyers, make the connections, and a lot can be hidden from the general public. I think he finally understood that this was going to totally unwind. There was no way he could win this one. So this is my last Epstein report, unless something major breaks. But we do have confirmation that that's what he did. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.